Grand Central Terminal will celebrate its 100th anniversary this coming Saturday, a momentous occasion for one of New York's most visited landmarks, especially notable because it was once slated for demolition. Sam Roberts, the urban affairs correspondent for the New York Times and host of New York Times Close-Up Show on New York One, has told the story of this icon of New York's Gilded Age in a new book from Grand Central Publishing called Grand Central, How a Train Station Transformed America. It covers Cornelius Vanderbilt's railroad empire, a long-forgotten engineer named William Wilgus, who electrified the trains, and the historical preservation movement that helped save the terminal from the wrecking ball. I'm very pleased that it has brought Sam Roberts back to our show today. Hello.
Leonard, thanks for inviting me.
Now, is it just a coincidence that your publisher is named Grand Central?
I think that's synergy, we can call that. I think they fell in love with the idea and decided why not. That's the old Warner Books and renamed when they actually moved right near to Grand Central.
Now, the song we just heard called the Grand Central Station, and that's not its name. That's the post office down the block?
It's the post office down the block. It's the subway station beneath Grand Central, but Grand Central is indeed a terminal. It's a terminal, I think, for two reasons. One, trains originally and now terminate there. The other is that Penn Station was being built on the other side of town, and the Vanderbilt family wanted to say, we have the best and biggest railroad terminal in the world.
Well, the current station is not in its the original one, is it?
No, there was an original one that opened as Grand Central Depot in 1871. And when it opened, the New York Times said, it's neither Grand nor Central. What's it doing all the way up on 42nd Street? And what's so fascinating about the development of Grand Central was the Vanderbilts brought Midtown Manhattan to their doorstep. That spurred development that's going on to this day.
So we have Grand Central Terminal, Commodore Vanderbilt, Cornelius Vanderbilt, who is one of the key figures in American industrial history, or railroad history anyway, and he's in competition with the Cassatts and Penn, the Pennsylvania Railroad. So they pretty much are building their buildings at the same time?
They are. The first decade of the 20th century, the Pennsylvania Railroad finally decided that because of electrification, they could build a tunnel under the Hudson River. And before that, they were literally ferrying passengers from New Jersey. And after a fatal accident in the Park Avenue Tunnel, I discovered in writing the book that William Wilgus, who you mentioned, who was the chief engineer of the New York Central, said, we've got to electrify this railroad. That allowed them to deck over Park Avenue and for the first time monetize what became known as air rights.
How did he even come up with the idea? This is a man of limited education, wasn't he?
Well, he was. I think it's one of those things where someone reads the law. In this case, he probably apprenticed himself to an engineer as opposed to getting an engineering degree. He took a correspondence course from Cornell, in fact. But he rose very quickly to become chief engineer of the railroad, and they had faith in him and bought into his premise.
So when he came up with the idea, they said, okay, it's good. We're ready to spend, I guess it would even then be millions of dollars to electrify?
Well, that's one of the things that so fascinated me about Grand Central, that here was a private enterprise, and almost all the money for Grand Central came out of the Vanderbilt's pockets. They said, even though we make most of our money on freight, not on passenger service, we are going to make this a monument, a majestic cathedral. And they did that. And then now, almost 100 years later, a government entity wound up doing the same thing.
Well, Cassatt hired McKim, Mead & White, the most famous architectural firm in the area at the time. Who did Vanderbilt hire to make the building that we know and love on 42nd Street?
Well, it turned out that Grand Central was greater than the sum of its parts. There were two architectural firms hired. One was Reed and Stem, which sounds more like a landscape architectural firm. The other was Warren and Whitmore. Reed and Stem was related to Wilgus, the chief engineer. Warren and Whitmore had a better in. They were related to the Vanderbilts, and therefore they formed a combine and jointly designed the terminal.
And in this case, a building made by committee turns out to be pretty good.
It did. It is greater than the sum of its parts.
William Wilgus also invented the concept of air rights?
Yes, he did. They realized that, and we forget this, and again, during doing the book, I either re-remembered it or discovered it for the first time, that Park Avenue, what is now Park Avenue, was a giant trench in the middle of Manhattan that bisected Manhattan, almost from Lexington to Madison Avenues all the way up to 59th Street. And electrification meant they could deck it over. There was no smoke, no cinders from that. And they monetized all of that value and created billions of dollars of real estate.
Well, Cornelius Vanderbilt had built a subway on Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, but that was before electrification, and that's why that doesn't exist anymore?
That doesn't exist anymore. There were a lot of experiments with that, including sort of pneumatic tubes, the Albert Beach subway. And he also had an antipathy toward railroads when he was known as the Commodore. He was interested in passenger traffic up and down the Hudson.
So how did he get involved with railroads?
Well, he got involved because, interestingly enough, a railroad was able to take passengers going from Long Island to New England because the New England coast was hilly. So it was easier to take his ferry across and then pick up a railroad around Bridgeport or farther east. And he became interested in it and realized that that was the future.
And then he took control of New York Central or created New York Central?
He took control. It was an amalgam of dozens and dozens of railroads all over New York State and all over the Northeast. And Vanderbilt took control ruthlessly in the way robber barons did in that day. But the good news is they amassed enough money to be able to build a monument like Grand Central.
My guest is Sam Roberts. His latest book, Grand Central, How a Train Station Transformed America, as a foreword by Pete Hamill. At the time they decided to build this new Grand Central, the railroad company didn't own the land that they needed. Can you describe the political wheeling and dealing that had to be done to acquire the land?
Well, they didn't own the land, but they did own the New York State Legislature, which made it a lot easier. And what they were able to
I guess nothing's changed.
Nothing has changed. What they were able to do is get through legislation that said the railroad had the right to condemn the property and allow it to be adjudicated by the courts in its own version of eminent domain. So they bought all that land in Midtown Manhattan. It was all open railroad tracks. And ultimately, when they decked it over, they were able to monetize those air rights and create a property that is enormously valuable.
So, we have the Chrysler Building across the street. They probably wouldn't have built it and some of the other wonderful buildings in the area if the terminal hadn't been built.
That's true. That's why I said the terminal, one of the things I discovered in researching this, the terminal really brought Midtown to its doorstep.
Were there cost overruns, as there always seemed to be in projects like
this? Well, it would cost about $2 billion in today's money, and it was very expensive. And again, the railroad said, why are we doing this? Why are we investing so much in passenger traffic when we make most of our money on freight? But it was a showcase for the railroad. They wanted to say, we are the big New York Central Railroad. We care about our commuters.
And with passenger service around the country pretty much in decline, we still see thriving railroads going out of this station and Penn Station. You say it also changed Park Avenue. And didn't it lead to the development of the suburbs in Westchester and Connecticut?
It certainly did. The whole concept of commuting really began at Grand Central. And, you know, it's funny, when I started the book, the subtitle is How a Train Station Transformed America. And I said, am I really going to be able to live up to this?
America rather than the Northeast or the New York
or
metropolitan
Manhattan
area.
Exactly. And it turns out that it really did in so many ways, in urban planning and air rights and landmarks preservation with Jackie Onassis. Standard Time started at Grand Central Station. Arguably, the civil rights movement was nurtured there with A. Philip Randolph and the sleeping car porters.
Now, how different is it today from when it was built?
I'd say it's even better. It's hard to believe that a station built 100 years ago serves now more than 80 million passengers a year, more than ever before.
Well, it's also in a magnificent space, and it has that famous ceiling.
It has the famous ceiling, and one of the secrets I learned about Grand Central is the ceiling is backwards. A commuter noticed that just a couple of days after the terminal opened in 1913, looked up at that celestial ceiling and discovered the constellations are all backwards.
Now, Grand Central was eventually slated for the same fate as its old rival, Penn Station, and people wanted to tear it down, or somebody wanted to tear it down in the 1960s. Who owned the terminal at the time, and what did they plan to put up there?
Well, it was owned by Penn Central, the bankrupt railroad, and what they wanted to do was put up a new skyscraper that would produce revenue for the railroad from rents and other items. And the city came along, and what it showed was that Penn Station did not die in vain. Jack Ioannidis was instrumental in galvanizing a movement to save Grand Central.
We have a clip with Jackie Ioannidis, and do we want to call it Jackie Kennedy Ioannidis?
At the time, Jackie Kennedy Ioannidis.
I think it's so terribly important, and we've all heard that it's too late or that it has to happen or that it's inevitable, but I don't think that's true, because I think if there is a great effort, even if it's at the 11th hour, you can succeed, and I think, and I know that that's what we'll do.
And the threat to destroy Grand Central helped to form the Landmarks Preservation Society?
It did indeed. One of the things I didn't realize when I started the book is that the city almost did not appeal the decision, saying it had no right to landmark Grand Central. The city was financially strapped at the time. They were worried about liability. The Penn Central said, we'll sue you if you don't withdraw the landmark status. And it was really Jackie Ioannidis' intervention that galvanized the movement.
Well, there's often pressure from all sorts of places. Construction industry and the unions would have wanted to have put up a new building. The only thing that would have been lost was this magnificent edifice.
Well, what it proves is that Penn Station at least did not die in vain. People, I think, realized, the Municipal Arts Society and others, that when this happened, we're not going to let it happen again.
And then Metro North took over in 1983, and they began making improvements?
Making improvements. Peter Stengel at Metro North, one of the heroes of this story in the book, they came along and said, in enlightened self-interest, we're going to spend the money, we're going to restore this place, and they've done it meticulously so that it is probably in some respects more pristine than it was when it opened.
Well, it also has been a place where art exhibits have been presented, where there have been some wonderful restaurants over the years. Isn't there also some kind of a hidden railroad link with the Waldorf Astoria?
Yes, there is. It is hidden. It was used by FDR, among other presidents. There's a link directly under the Waldorf and an elevator that leads to that.
Is it still being used?
Well, one of the secrets I learned in doing the book is that when the President of the United States is in town and staying at the Waldorf, there is a train manned at the ready under the Waldorf to speed him out of town as an emergency egress in case there is some blockage on the street.
There are incredible things about this, not only the ceiling, which has 2,500 stars and 10 major constellations and zodiac signs. The bulbs are all bare. Why is that?
Well, good question. You'd think these ornate brass chandeliers would have globes on them or crystal on them. The bulbs are bare because the Vanderbilts wanted to show off the fact this was an all-electric railroad station.
We have a lovely slideshow of images of Grand Central Terminal from 1871 onward on our show page at WNYC.org. Are there any celebrations planned for the centennial that my listeners can attend?
Well, lots of celebrations on Friday, February 1st at Grand Central.
Well, you say that it really isn't Saturday. It's midnight. They actually started midnight Friday night?
The terminal opened midnight on February 1st, so the first full day was February 2nd. The first train, I think, left at about 12:03 for Boston.
And how many people were there?
Well, by the mid-afternoon of that Sunday, 150,000 people had trooped through Grand Central.
So the public thought this was a great idea. They loved the building from the start?
From the very beginning, they loved it. And I just wish, you know, when you go to it today, we wouldn't take it for granted and would, you know, take a little bit of time to gawk at it.
We don't have much time, but how did you get involved in this project?
Well, it's interesting. I have a long involvement with Grand Central. When I was a little kid, my father took me to visit, and an engineer saw me staring at this giant locomotive and said, hey, you want to drive this thing? Put me on his lap, put my hand on the throttle, and I drove it what probably was a few feet but seemed like miles.
Sam Roberts is the author of 7 nonfiction books, the editor of an 8th, and he has covered New York for the Daily News and the New York Times. Also on New York One, his book Grand Central, published by Grand Central.